This is your host, Silas Dean, and this is a Creep Time original podcast, The Sinister. So make sure to go check out Creep Time, the podcast, right after this show.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Well, you can't trust County.
There is a noise that occurs on everybody's phone. Every single person recognizes it, and it's become sort of symbolic of tragedy the second that you do hear it. The Amber Alert. You get that notification on your phone or on a computer, on social media. It lets you know that a child in your area has gone missing. They are in immediate danger, and there is the possibility for serious injury or death. But what a lot of people may not know is that the inception of the broadcast system, the Amber Alert, is actually rooted in a very real case. The case of Amber Hagerman, a 9-year-old girl who was riding her bike just 2 blocks away from her grandparents' house when she was abducted into a truck by a man in broad daylight. This is her story. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of The Sinister with Silas. I'm your host, Silas Dean. And every week I come right on here. I hang out with you right after an episode of Creep Time, the podcast, and I cover the eeriest stories that I know. So please follow and subscribe to the podcast and turn on the bell notification so that you never have to miss an episode. And I would also appreciate a review and if you could share the podcast to help support the stories of the sinister. Thanks again for stopping by. And with that, let's get into the story. So let's first set up some of the context about when does this take place? Where does it take place? So this is January 13th, 1996. We're in Arlington, Texas. And really, we're going to focus in at one specific time of day and around one very specific girl, Amber. On this day, Amber, as well as her mother, Donna, and her little brother, Ricky, they were over at the grandparents' house. This is right in Arlington. It's about 3:10 p.m. Now, if I could really set up the story and kind of paint the picture here and just explain how quickly all of this goes down, picture it. It's 3:10 p.m. Amber, she's 9 years old. Her little brother, he's a couple of years younger than her. They're going to go out on their bikes. They leave the grandparents' house. They have explicit instructions from her mother, Donna. Okay, you can go out on your bikes. Do not go any further than the block. They're in like a very suburban area. It looks very safe. It's not even that wild to assume or allow your kids to go out and ride your bike in a safe neighborhood. But Amber went just a little bit further. By 3:18 p.m., we know that her little brother last saw her riding her bike just a little bit further past where she was allowed to go, about 2 blocks away from the house. He decided to go back. When he returned and Donna just saw that it was just him, Donna started to panic. Where's your sister? Where's Amber? So what I could gather while going through the story, you know, moment by moment, is that Donna and her husband, Amber's father, they immediately take off to the last known whereabouts of where they think Amber was going, which was close to this convenience store that was like 2 blocks away. Simultaneously, there is a 911 call coming in from a man who lives nearby who just saw something. He called 911. He claims, "I just saw a man in a black pickup truck grab a little girl right from a parking lot, throw her in the truck," and she hollered. His exact words, she hollered as he threw her in. The truck took off. Nobody knows where she's going. Nobody knows who that was, but it seemed very clear. I mean, that's an opportunistic abduction, so incredibly rare. I think possibly even more rare for a child, but it does happen. Almost instantly, we have police who are dispatched to the scene. People are on foot. A search party assembles. The family has called in friends. They've called in other family. I mean, it was kind of incredible, like reading through this story, just how quickly everybody jumped into action. I mean, they had flyers out by the first day. Everybody was looking for her because every minute kind of counts. I think statistically, if the first 24 hours of an abduction for a child don't turn up any results, the probability that that child is dead is exponentially growing after those first 24 hours. But they did not find Amber. So then we're going to graduate on to the following day. What happens on January 14th? Now, I think at this point, the media coverage had really picked up in full force on this. I mean, there was no shortage of anyone who knew Amber's name, knew her face. So people were certainly looking for her. But I think what enamored people was just, one, how quickly the abduction actually took place. But also, this was not a delayed response. I mean, officers were called and dispatched almost instantly. So how was someone who a witness saw, I mean, they saw a description of the guy, they got a description of the truck. How was it possible that that person became so elusive despite everyone looking for this black pickup truck? It was just, it didn't seem to make sense, but the further and further they searched, doing aerial searches, road stops, as time went on, even after the first 24 hours, they started to assume that Amber was probably taken out of the state at this point. And if so, this is a much wider search than what anyone has resources for. These feelings of sort of a growing hopelessness would sort of persist over the next 72 hours following the abduction. And what I will say is that there's something very haunting specifically about Amber's case. And what a lot of people may not know is that Amber and her family were actually in the midst of being filmed by a documentary crew. This was something like maybe 6 or 7 weeks just prior to her disappearance that Amber had actually celebrated her 9th birthday on camera. The reason that she was being filmed for this documentary crew and, you know, for this project was that there was a case to be made for welfare reform in Texas at the time. Amber and her family were going to be subjects of the documentary, so there's all this footage of this little girl. And nobody had any idea that in just 7 weeks from then, Amber would be a missing person. But in a devastating turn of events, this is not a case of a disappearance. This is a case of a murder. Because on the fourth day, someone in that neighborhood, just 4 miles away from the location where we know Amber was abducted, someone was walking their dog past a creek area. They looked over a fence, and what they saw at the bottom of that fence, just a little ways away, was a pale white body. This was the body of 9-year-old Amber. She was in horrific shape. It's a chilling and it's a devastating blow to the case. I mean, there were so many people involved who really tried to keep up the hope, even though the odds were against them that they would find Amber, even if it was something horrible. It could be a ransom situation. Nobody wants to find a little girl dead. They had to contact the family, who were, of course, devastated. Her mother actually came in to see the body, which police did not want her to. I mean, it had only been 4 days, but Amber was pretty severely decomposed. I mean, really in bad physical shape. Her mother was insistent on seeing the body, even though police told her, if you do see her, you can't touch the body because it's not fully intact. You can imagine there's pretty much an upheaval in this community. There's a lot of outrage, there's a lot of pain, and there's a lot of fear. There's an intense amount of fear. Who would do something like this? We don't have a suspect, we don't have a lead. And what everybody thought was that they had left the state, as mentioned before. Apparently not. Or if they did, they came back to dump that body just 4 miles away from where she went missing. So there are a lot of parents who are still trying to rally and bond together to, one, support the family of this girl, but at the same time, track down the guy who did this. So what do we know about our suspect? We did have that 911 caller who was, I mean, completely invaluable to the police. You can imagine having a witness statement like that, one, to confirm in the manner that she was abducted and exactly where, but two, we know what he looked like. So the profile that police kind of put together, of course, he's driving the black pickup truck. He's somewhat under 6 feet, but he's not quite a short male. Somewhere maybe in like his mid-20s, definitely looks like a younger guy. and he is light-skinned. So he's either white or he might be light-skinned Hispanic. But outside of, the immediate physical descriptors of what that witness saw in that split second that they saw her get abducted, we don't really have anything else to go on other than the psychological profile to assume that this is more than likely somebody who presents with psychotic behaviors and ideations. But nonetheless, the hunt is on. The investigators are going full force. How do we recreate the exact moment-by-moment sequence of what happened from when Amber was abducted all the way until when we know her body was dumped in the creek? Now, something I can mention here is that we do know on the night that she was found, the fourth day following her abduction, it was raining. So not only was she found in and near a small body of water, there was a significant amount of water pouring over her body, which in turn had washed away a considerable amount of forensic evidence. So with that avenue pretty much being a loss, they went back to figure out, okay, how do we figure out the timestamp by timestamp, moment by moment sequence of what exactly went down? So here's what we know. Based on the witness statement from the neighbor who actually saw the abduction, we know that it went down at exactly 3:15 when she was thrown into the back of this black pickup truck. The truck left the Winn-Dixie parking lot and then immediately took a left on East Abram Street. Now, what was interesting about this was that it's not clear if this was intentional, if this is someone who knew not to do this, but he left no fingerprints on the bike, because what the witness saw was that he came up from behind her, grabbed her under the armpits, right under her arms, and lifted her off the bike. Very, very careful maneuver as to not leave any physical evidence of his own on the one object he's leaving behind. But once he gets her in the truck and he takes that left, I want to talk about that. That's a little interesting to me because that left would actually signal that he's not going towards the highway in this neighborhood. So the whole theory about him immediately leaving the state or trying to get as far away as possible from the neighborhood, that didn't make sense. He must have a place that he's going to go hide her out in. He's probably a local, possibly even a neighbor. This was something that police were willing to toy with a little bit, to assume that whether or not this guy is a local, he at least knows the area somewhat well. Reason being is because that creek, the creek where she was found, it's not a very well-known spot unless you're from this town. It's actually pretty well hidden. So for someone to take the time, if they did, to go and scope that out, they would have had to do so much sooner, much earlier in advance. It most of it just kind of alludes to somebody who probably grew up in the area or at least had been in the area for a considerable amount of time, which brings up the question, was this premeditated? If so, how far in advance? Was Amber being watched or was this fully opportunistic? That is something in this case, creepers, I'm sure you'll agree with me here, but that is something so chilling to me. I'm not a parent, but I can imagine the horror from the perspective of a parent to just even conceive of the idea that your kids outside in your neighborhood playing in the yard, riding their bikes down the street in a suburban neighborhood might have been being watched. This truck, who's to say? This truck wasn't tailing them for weeks, wasn't watching Amber for weeks. She had been outside before. She'd been playing alone in the yard before. It's horrifying to me to imagine that she could have been watched, she could have been stalked, and the one second, the one blip where she got just far enough away out of the view of the home, two blocks away, this guy took his chance. There's something about it that makes you feel just a little bit closer to maybe trying to understand who this person was, or at least where they fit in this community, but there are still gaps in the story. Things that I can't figure out. It's really difficult for me to concede to this being a local, and yet nobody has ever seen the black pickup truck because police did search all of the surrounding area. If somebody had one in their garage, in their driveway, if it was registered, they were going to get a visit. So there's a lot of different ways we can dissect that. I don't think that it's particularly relevant or prudent to the conversation to go too far into that. I would shift into the next phase of the story, which is really talking about the aftermath with the family. How did they manage the grief? How did they manage moving forward in the investigation? Now, what Donna had originally allowed was the documentary crew that had previously been filming the documentary for the welfare topic. They were going to continue to film. This was playing out in real time. And Donna was very keen to look for any exposure she could get on Amber's story. So she would do press interviews. She would work with the media. She allowed the documentary crew to continue to film. And really what they saw was a woman who was fighting for her life. She was fighting to stay alive, to find the will to want to fight for Amber, to figure out what happened to her daughter. A lot of this, and we see this with other parents who have faced abduction with their children and murders with their children, they have to find ways to channel that fury and that anger. And Donna's real MO became this question. How do we answer this question of why did it take so long to assemble so many people in the public, or at least alert so many people in the public, that there was a missing child? She testified about this, and she sort of tried to bargain to petition and see if people could change the laws, if people could reform what it means when a child goes missing. How do we track that? How do we alert people? These pleas did not fall on deaf ears. A woman, actually, by the name of Diana Simone, it came to her when she heard this story, this idea about an alert system, an emergency broadcast system that could alert the general public in a market, in a given area, there's a missing child. She called in with this idea. She had, you know, put it out publicly, and pretty soon it was adopted into what was known initially as the Amber Plan. This is considered the inception of the first ever emergency broadcast system specifically tailored towards notifying the public of missing children. Something we have all come to know as the public, and something that has saved countless children going forward as the Amber Alert. And if you're wondering, you know, just how effective an Amber Alert has been, how it's actually shifted the way that we perceive passing information when it comes to missing children, something close to 99% of Amber Alert cases end up in a resolution. That is a staggering difference. That is real progress. And of course, even to this day, there are still cases of Amber Alerts leading to the whereabouts of missing children. And there are very specific criteria that need to be met in order for an Amber Alert to be issued. One of which is law enforcement has to confirm that an abduction has taken place, whether that's through witness statements, video footage, so forth. The child must also be at risk of serious injury and/or death. There must be sufficient information that can be given for the alert, such as the description of the child, the captor, or the captor's vehicle, and of course, any child that is missing has to be 17 or younger. And of course, there are a lot of children who are found completely safe from this system, and a lot of people revere the Amber Alert system in Amber's memory, but something that has never been solved from it is Amber's case. Since the 90s, since Amber was abducted and found dead, no one has ever been able to determine who it was who really took her on that day and how they knew where to put her body. Her mother has continued to be an advocate for this system. She believes that this system is a celebration of her daughter's strength, of her as a fighter, of her daughter's legacy, which is that no child can go missing without people knowing. But as of today, nearly 20 years after the case, Amber's story still remains unsolved. But I'm very happy. I'm very happy that we got a chance to dive into this. I think a lot of people know that the Amber Alert is connected back to a real case, a real girl named Amber. But I don't think I knew the exact extent of her abduction. I didn't know how quickly all of it went down. It went down in broad daylight. It was shocking to me there was a witness who actually saw the man, saw the person take her, but we still have no idea who it really was all these years later, decades later. But I do want to thank you for going back in time with me to go through a little sliver of history as to why this service, why this broadcast system is meaningful and what the real origin story is behind it. So thank you for listening. I really appreciate it, creepers. I know they're not easy to get through, but these are important stories to tell. So I want to thank you for always advocating and suggesting them, raising more awareness so that more people hear them. Thank you for listening. And as always, I'm going to say goodbye, good luck. I'll catch you on Creep Timer, maybe an After Dark episode to calm down a little bit, to simmer down after some of these stories. So thanks again, and I'll see you on the next one. Bye, guys.